Aloha and welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm Danny Yamashiro with my co-host, Martin Arinaga. Welcome to The Good Life. We are here to help unleash your God-given purpose. Japan has faced an unprecedented cataclysm in three compounding parts: earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear radiation exposure. The damage of each singularly is enough to shake the core of any nation. All three would have been virtually unthinkable as early as just a few weeks ago. It's during these critical moments of crisis where the love of Christ is often most vividly expressed. The reason Martin and I are here today, and the reason we have the Good Life Hawaii radio show, is to remind you that in the midst of life's cataclysms, God knows you, God loves you, and God, in a tumultuous world, the tumultuous world internationally, and the tumultuous world of your everyday life, God is a steady hand, a solid foundation upon which you can rely, a faithful, faithful God, loving God. At a time when multitudes are evacuating, and this is certainly not a judgment on any person who has decided to do so, some people are going in to the places that have been most devastated, namely Christian missionaries, like my friend James Coble of the Every Nation organization, who is based at Grace Bible Yokohama, along with Pastor Scott Dauma. James has already gone in three times to the hardest hit areas. We might just call them the impact zone, and has been selected to coordinate an even larger collaboration of workers from Japan and overseas to distribute much-needed supplies and resources to begin the rebuilding process. Today, in a special pre-recorded interview that I recently had with James, I want you to listen in and hear the seriousness, hear the gravity of what is going on the ground, right there in Japan at this very time. Here's James Coble. Hello, James.
Hello, good morning.
James, where were you when the earthquake hit?
I was actually in the office downtown Yokohama.
So you were in Yokohama. What describe for us, how did it feel? What was it like?
Well, you know, living in Japan, you get used to earthquakes a little bit. But that afternoon we were in the office. It was just our church secretary and another volunteer. And we were just having a conversation. And the earthquake hit, and it started off pretty mellow, and we kind of paused for a second and said, "Oh, earthquake."
Mm-hmm.
And then we said, "Oh, this is a long earthquake." And then it really started to shake, and I think we all knew that this was not just a normal earthquake. A few seconds into it, you know, the girls got a little panicked, and one yelled out, "You know, what do we do?" And I, you know, get under the table, and they were under the table in front of me, and I could literally, we're on the second floor of a small building,
mm-hmm.
and we have some very large trees that line our street, and the trees were just shaking like a, I don't even know how to describe it. You can't even believe that trees could shake that violently.
Hmm.
And copy machines were moving across the room, and it was long. It was really long. I mean, that's the when it starts to get pretty scary, is that it just keeps going and going and going, and then, you know, it was pretty scary. I mean, I've never felt anything like that. And we're not even near the epicenter at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Eventually, we had to evacuate the building, and I was kind of reluctant. I thought, okay, it's over. You know, why do we have to stop working? But when we moved outside, we're in a very, very large city, 4 million people, and I live in, we're in a very heavily populated business area. There's a stadium next to the office, the Yokohama Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in that area had, thousands of people had piled into that stadium park to get away from the building.
And
I thought, this is unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then when the second aftershock came and I was outside and I watched buildings, you know, in Yokohama, the buildings are very close together. I watched buildings hit against other buildings. They're banging into each other. And things that I thought were immovable were moving quite easily during that second aftershock. And, you know, some people were pretty shaken up. Mm-hmm. You know, people, it was like the end of the world for some people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Others, it was a good break from the office. I mean, there was a wide spectrum of emotion out there, but that was visually, it was pretty eye-opening. Mm-hmm. We didn't sustain a whole lot of damage in Yokohama. The few videos you see of Yokohama, you know, buildings falling apart, very few buildings that actually happened. But it was pretty scary.
Now, you know, when you say, you know, it happened over it was long period of time. What time frame is that?
I think they said the first one lasted 3 minutes.
Whew.
You know, 3 minutes is an eternity in a magnitude that great. Like I said, I had never been to anything as close to that. The second one was almost as bad. I mean, you know, there were some buildings that got really damaged right near our place, one or two. Near our office, we saw a lot of broken windows, and the sidewalks were, you know, popped up and cracked. And it was a lot of people. That day just ended like that. Everybody just went home. My wife and children were out on a excursion. And they ended up stranded in Tokyo, ended up spending the night in a shelter in a gym. And I had no way of contacting them. Telephones instantly went dead. All the cellular phones, everything. Because I think they just shut them down for emergency use.
James, what about the tsunami?
The tsunami, from what I read, came just about an hour after the first quake hit. I know that the siren warnings went off, and a lot of people were able to move away from, you know, being in a port city up there in Sendai.
Mm-hmm.
That's the third tsunami that I know of that's recorded that's come through that town. It's, you know, not so far, in pretty recent history. So they understand tsunami, and they understand earthquakes. We understand what can happen. So I think a lot of people did move out, even though the numbers are so high. But, and then, from what I hear, because it was an hour, some people actually went back and thought that they could get things. They thought maybe the tsunami's not coming. And so we heard a few stories of people returning to their homes and getting caught in the tsunami.
James, what was your impression of the people of Japan and how they responded to this cataclysm?
You know, I think, yeah, that's a, I think if it was any place else in the world or countries that don't, you know, deal with these kinds of things, it would have been a lot worse than it was. I think people of Japan, they're strong, strong people.
What have you been involved in since the disaster?
I think what you know, we were all kind of taken back and wondering what our role is in this. We knew we had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
We have a pastor, Rick Justice, who's out in Zenji, and he immediately started looking for trucks and building up relief supplies and called us, and we just all jumped in and got involved. So basically what we've done so far, we've been just chipping in as much goods as we can, taking it to various relief centers. And there's a lot of pockets of people who are not in relief centers. You know, they're holed up in Buddhist temples and elementary schools and not in the mainstream areas. And we've been trying to get to them through the local pastors that are up there in the area, just working with them and trying to get relief supplies to those that are kind of not in the mainstream areas.
So far, how many times have you gone into the hardest hit areas?
Personally, I've been up three times. I just came back on Sunday night. And we've sent just our local church. There's a lot of other churches that are going out there and doing the same thing. But just in our Every Nation family, we've sent out five trucks so far.
Mm-hmm.
We have another one going out on Saturday. And, but I've been up there three times. Each time, I can't believe that it could get any worse. And it does every single time.
Can you describe for us what you've seen?
It's really hard to describe because the distance that this disaster covers, that's what really gets you drive for 30 minutes and you see the destruction, and 30 minutes later you see the destruction, and 2 hours later you're looking at the same level of destruction. I mean, if it hit Oahu, it's literally the whole island, you know, would be looking like that. I mean, it's a large area. I don't know exactly how far it was, but it's hundreds and hundreds of kilometers that it's covering. So that and then just the magnitude of, I was standing in a neighborhood, I just put some pictures up on Facebook. I mean, all you have is concrete slabs. There's nothing left.
Hmm.
Just the whole neighborhood is gone.
Hmm.
It's hard to imagine it. I mean, that part, this is going to take a long, 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 long time to rebuild that.
Hmm.
And there are many other cities that I haven't even been to are the same way.
When you go in with your teams, James, and you go into these pockets where people are kind of held up in certain areas, what do you guys do?
It depends on who we're working with. If we're working with a relief center, a lot of times we're not even able to get where the people are. We're just dropping it off at a distribution point, and then they're taking it over from there because some of the roads are hard to get to. Early on, it was very difficult because they hadn't cleared a lot of the debris yet, so we couldn't get that close. The last few times we went in, we were able to go right into the hardest hit areas, and we basically drop off supplies and do whatever we can. One thing that's been really good, because we're just going in with three-man teams, four-man teams, we're not going in with a large team, is just listening to stories and allowing people to share what happened to them and just to pray for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there is a deep desire and eagerness to share, to express themselves?
Yeah, on Sunday, when we were down there, we were down on the boat harbor, and there's massive boats that were up on top of the breakwall, and we just stopped in because we had about six of our pastors, with our last team that went in. We just went to go visit some of the pastors there and see what we could do with them, and a young man approached us a few times. It happened already, and they just immediately begin to share what happened to them. And you can tell they need to tell people what happened.
Sort of a part of a healing process.
Yeah. You know, he asked us why we were there, and we said, you know, we're Christians and we're here to help. And he said, oh, it's really good that you're here. Very open to prayer, and we exchanged contact information. Unbelievable story. I think that even hits you harder than even just seeing what's going on there.
James, can you think of one right now, a story that really stood out to you?
Well, that story at the boat harbor, I mean, that young man, his name was Hoshi-san. And we were looking at this massive boat on the wall, and that's a big boat, and he just walked up from the direction of the boat and asked us what we're doing. And he just began to explain that the boat on the wall belonged to his good friend. And I'm going to get choked up here. He goes there every day. Got to compose myself. He goes there every day to see if his friend would return to the site, because he hasn't seen him. And he was telling us that when the warnings hit, a lot of the fishermen, you know, they understand earthquakes and tsunamis, so a lot of them immediately jumped in their boats and raced out to sea to beat the tsunami, and a lot of them did. A good portion of the fishing fleet were saved, but the boats that you see wrecked on, you know, on the news and everything, are the ones who, you know, either weren't around or didn't know what's going on. And he fears that a lot of his friends were in their usual spot in the pachinko parlor, the Japanese slot machine, right down the block there. And if they were in there, he fears that they didn't hear the sirens, they didn't know what was going on. And, you know, we drove past those pachinko parlors, and there's nothing left. Skeleton. So we asked him where he was, and he said he was at the train station down the street, and he said the water filled up so quickly there was no.
We're here with a special rebroadcast of a recent interview I had with missionary James Coble. James is with Every Nation Ministries. He's there at Grace Bible Yokohama under the leadership of Pastor Scott Dalma. But James has gone into the hardest hit areas in Japan, and he speaks with utter sobriety, along with the weightiness, the heaviness of the reality of what he has seen. I'm here with my co-host today, Martin Arinaga. We're going to just talk a little bit, you know, this disaster and the process of recovery, rebuilding is utterly immense. And for us to just dialogue about it, and even with you as you listen and you process together, perhaps God will use it not only to bring healing and hope to you and your own situation in life right now, but listen to the Holy Spirit and how He would be speaking to you as well about ways that you could help. And our dear friend James will share about that when we come back from our break, and talk not only about that, but what about the nuclear power plant and the meltdown that's taking place? How have the churches responded? How has his family responded as a missionary? Martin Arinaga and I will be back. So stay with us. We'll be back and we'll hear more from James Coble, right from Japan.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky, leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
On a dark winter night at Hawaii's Pali Ridge, Danny Yamashiro's life was forever changed as he fell 300 feet off a cliff, attempting to rescue his girlfriend. With a fractured skull, torn scalp, a shattered ankle, and smashed body, he fell again, another 100 feet. No one thought he would live. Danny's book, Paradise Calls, is a spellbinding story of survival and hope. A first-hand account of crushed dreams, recovery, and renewed faith to bring Christ's message of hope to people everywhere. Here's Danny.
As you read Paradise Calls, may God bless you and enrich your life with divine hope in the midst of whatever challenge you face today.
Danny Yamashiro can also be heard on the Good Life Radio Show at 2 p.m. on the new KGU 99.5 FM and on AM 760 KGU. Visit thegoodlifehawaii.org and remember to get Paradise Calls by Danny Yamashiro, available at bookstores throughout Hawaii. For more information, visit Danny online at thegoodlifehawaii.org.
Have you been blessed by the Good Life Hawaii radio show? Have the stories been an inspiration to you? What if you had the opportunity to improve the quality of another person's life, someone like your family member or friend? Danny Yamashiro is looking for friends of the Good Life to prayerfully consider a monthly financial gift. You will receive monthly letters from Danny that will equip and encourage you. I invite you to become a financial partner with Danny Yamashiro Ministries. With your gift, you will become part of Danny's ministry team and help reach more people with God's love and hope through Jesus Christ. Write your check to Danny Yamashiro Ministries and mail it to P.O. Box 700998 Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. That's Danny Yamashiro Ministries, P.O. Box 700998, Kapolei, Hawaii 96709. Or go to www.dannyyamashiro.org. To The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii radio show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guests.
Welcome back to our show. I'm here with my co-host today, my co-host in studio with me, Martin Arinaga. And we're here doing a special show today. I recently did an interview. It was a live interview with James Coble, who's a missionary in Japan. He's there. He's gone into the most difficult areas, and he's seen the utter devastation, and he's shared with us what his experience has been. He's going to share more with us about how to help, how best to be of service, you know, in a time like this, how things have impacted his family and other families that are there. He'll talk to us a little bit more about the nuclear power plant, the nuclear meltdown, the situation in there that we've been hearing about in the media, and some other things. But we've got some, you know, just listening, I know it stirs up a bunch of emotions in you. Sometimes emotions go beyond thought, you know. But, you know, we've got some reflections as well.
Mm. You know, as I was listening to James share his firsthand eyewitness, what struck me was when he had said that immovable objects are moving. You have buildings banging against each other. Mm. I mean, credit to architects and engineers, but it's, you got to be crazy. You what? You know, they're actually hitting each other. I mean, that kind of was a good visual picture to me of how violent this earthquake was. And he said minutes. I mean, earthquakes that I felt are seconds.
Right.
This is minutes, and
right.
It's huge. So I can, I'm just feeling for the fear, I'm sure, that has been.
And what he was
there.
Seeing. And I've been there to their office, to their church. What he's seeing, that's in Yokohama.
Uh-huh.
That's downtown. 100, 100, 150 you know, I guess would be miles mm-hmm. away mm-hmm. from what would have even been close mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. epicenter of what the greatest levels of devastation was. But, you know, it also brings to bear the fact that, I guess, not to over-spiritualize things, but, you know, we think certain things in our lives are immovable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, life itself is vacillating. Things mm-hmm. change. Things can change overnight. What guarantees do we really have? And it takes moments like these to really, I guess, and this is more than figurative in a literal way, to shake us to the core.
And he was talking about his friend who went to the pachinko parlor. Well, obviously he doesn't know where he is, and his fear is that he didn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a good reminder to all of us that that's just one person, one interview, and
right.
yet
right.
he was so troubled. And now we're talking about, you know, several thousand people mm. missing mm. and counting, and everybody has a story. I don't think in Japan there's anybody that does not know anybody that has not been affected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's widespread. Mm-hmm. And Japan, too. I mean, you hear about earthquakes in Pakistan and Tahiti, but unless you know somebody or you get images and first-hand accounts, it somehow feels distant. But Japan, we've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Japanese. That's my heritage. So mm-hmm. I think that's the reason why it's there. But yet, we cannot ignore the fact that this is happening throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just right here in the middle and in front of our face. So I can't help but feel like, okay, what can I do? I know I want to do something. What is it that I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
I have some idea.
Well, James will speak to us even about that. Certainly a humbling moment. You can just hear the humility that swept over the face of a nation, but it impacts us too in the United States, even here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. It's humbling before to see the extent of what can happen so quickly. But let's take a listen to our talk with James.
Choice he had to swim for his life in that tsunami, and I can't even believe what that was like.
He swam.
Yeah, he had to swim for his life. And the last part of the story he was sharing with us, he said that as the city was trying to evacuate, and everybody was in their cars trying to get out of the tsunami's way, but the people on the outskirts of town had no idea that the tsunami was coming, and they were still stopping for red lights and obeying the traffic signals, and it caused a huge traffic jam. And he said the last thing you could hear was the whole city honking their horns frantically, and then the tsunami and wiped out the whole city.
Yeah. James, in relation to your family, how has your family, you, Karen, the kids, how has your family responded to this?
You know, as our family and as our spiritual family here, I mean, we immediately again pray for the people up there. We kind of organize everything we can on this side, just,
mm-hmm.
you know, get as much relief up there, trying to figure out how to support the pastors up there. My son, he came with me on my second trip up there, so he really wanted to get involved. So he came up as a translator and navigator in the van.
This is Sean.
Yeah, Sean. He's going to turn 16 this month.
So he actually went with you.
Yeah.
On one of the missions into the hardest hit areas.
It's a long drive. It's a over 6 hour drive, and we're going places that don't have streets or anything anymore. So we take three-man teams, at least two drivers and one navigator, somebody that has a GPS so we can kind of figure out where we are. The roads are pretty clear now, but we try to stay with that format. And Sean, because he's bilingual and he's a real picky guy, he really wanted to go.
Mm.
We were able to take him up on one of our trips. But the family's doing well. I mean, they're responding well. I mean, the reality is life in Yokohama is kind of returned back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, you know what's going on up there, and you're organizing what you can, but we're fine down here. There's no damage for us.
James, what about the churches? You know, there are many Christian churches, different denominational movement type backgrounds. But how have they, what have you seen, how they have responded collectively?
I think what we realize right now, and when I say we, I mean the body of Christ,
mm-hmm.
in Japan, or even worldwide, we realize that, you know, this tragedy, this is our purpose. This is why we're here. And so we've seen lots of cross denomination. I mean, we're taking up working with the Baptist Church, and they don't have trucks, so we find trucks to pick their stuff up. And then a different denomination has a truck, and they let us borrow it because we have drivers. And as far as I know, every church I know in the Yokohama and Tokyo area, everybody's going up there and trying to work together and trying to help these people. The interesting thing about Sendai is you won't hear too much about churches being damaged, and that's because there are very, very few churches up there. This is one of the most unreached parts of Japan. And so, of course, we want to bring relief, but we also want to give this opportunity if these people need healing, they need salvation.
Mm-hmm. Explain to us, James, your perspective of the effects of the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, you know, that's probably been one of the more difficult things to deal with the media and the fear that comes out of there. I mean, my first trip in, I was 6 days after the tsunami hit, and so not even a week, and we were up there, and, you know, my of course, understandably, my family in the U.S., in Hawaii, we're terrified about going up there, but the reality is we were never in any type of danger up there. But I think the media, the way that they report things, I mean, they're not inaccurate, but because they don't tell you the whole picture or give you something to compare with,
mm-hmm.
they just say, you know, it's 1,000 times more. What does that mean? That means you're getting an X-ray today. You know, that's 1,000 times more than normal. So that's been difficult because of the panic that it's been putting into people's hearts and minds, and the fear that comes out of that. And that probably, that fear lasted a lot longer than the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
We've never felt in danger at any time whatsoever. I mean, there is danger, of course, but it's right in that area. That 30-kilometer radius is you know, what Japan has officially said is the danger zone. We've probably been about 70 kilometers away at the closest. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I understand it. I understand the fear. It is a fearful thing, but that really has kind of hampered. People have just fled the country. I mean, just dropped their things and left. And, they see all the U.S. military pulling out the personnel. It causes a lot of panic. But, you know, of course, there is a real danger there. We've never felt the need at all. Of course, if I did feel it, I would take my family out of harm's way, but it's never come close to that.
James, what do you feel the Lord is doing at this time in Japan? Your personal reflection.
You're going to hear a lot of different people, you know, talk about reasons why And, you know, you're going to hear some of the more ignorant people talking about judgment and things. And I don't really care about any of those things. The reality is there's a tragedy that's happened, and as Christians, what is our response? And, I think that's what we need to focus on right now. What I feel like the Lord wants us to do is to just respond.
James Coble from Japan sharing gut level with us. And, we're face to face with something that in very many respects is unprecedented. And it really hits home, like you said, Martin. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll, share a few words. But we also have someone right there, right now, as we speak. One of Hawaii's spiritual generals is there in Japan right now. And we've got a special time of sharing. He's going to tell us what's going on, what he sees from his perspective. So you don't want to miss this. This is going to be real special. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky, leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. The fact that there are business owners who care enough about our community to bring God's hope to people is one of the greatest gifts to society. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show appreciates their generous financial support.
The Good Life Radio Show is a ministry that has a family of financial supporters. Grateful for their generosity, Danny Yamashiro and the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show would like to thank Wahiwa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, A1A electrician Tony Lathrop Lee of State Farm Mililani, HMC Karaoke, Birch Union Service Station on School Street, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Michael Beasley of Kiani, Realtor Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, and Chinnan and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated. To learn more about our sponsors and further sponsorship opportunities, visit thegoodlifehawaii.org.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Wahiawa. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Wahiawa, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out? Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guests.
Welcome back to our show. I'm here with my co-host, Martin Arinaga. We were listening to a previously recorded interview that I had with James Coble, missionary in Japan. And just a couple of things related to James, Martin, is that he said, if you want to volunteer, if you want to come, don't just go and show up. Work with an existing organization, a church that already has things organized, then your resources are much better harnessed and you become an asset as opposed to someone who, you know, may detract.
Right, the helpers can become trouble.
Yeah.
If they don't act together, work together.
He also mentioned, Martin, you know, at the end, he said, you know, 6 months from now, when all the excitement wears off, help is still going to be needed. So to be very mindful of that. And I would imagine even certainly beyond that. But you know what? We have a very special leader in Hawaii. His name is Pastor Bill Stonebreaker of Calvary Chapel of Honolulu. Right now, Martin, he is in Japan with a missionary friend, partner, and they are there to do some very important work right now, and we have him on the line. Pastor Bill, welcome. Welcome to our show.
Yes, Danny. Hi, it's good to hear you.
Yes, good to have you back again, not in studio this time, but live on the ground there in Japan. Pastor, where are you?
Well, we're on the road and we're driving to Miyagi. We're actually in Miyagi. We're going to visit some of the devastated areas. It's, mm-hmm. it's really like a war zone in so many of the places that we visited.
Wow. What have you seen?
Well, we've seen some incredible devastation. I think the news media has shown the tsunami and just totally obliterating certain coastal areas on the north. And so we're visiting those areas to do an assessment, to come back and maybe help out in the rebuilding, the cleaning up portion. Mm-hmm. We visited some of the evacuation centers where there's anywhere from 100 to 250 people in those centers. And there's over 3,000, I think the number was about 3,500 of these evacuation centers throughout the area. So you have over a quarter of a million people that are displaced and without a home. And mm-hmm. so we're visiting them and giving them supplies. And we're on our way to go house to house to try to give comfort and aid. And we have tracts that we give them, but we're also trying to relieve the just the hopelessness that so many of them feel right now.
What are some of the things that you're giving? What is it that they need that you guys are giving away?
Well, in some areas, they don't have any electricity. The electricity is coming on, but it's very sporadic. And in some areas, they don't have any propane gas, mm-hmm. so they can't heat their food and heat their water and so forth. And so we're bringing in portable gas stoves. We just bought for one of the centers that have a couple hundred people, we just bought and purchased six washing machines because they have no way to wash their clothes. So we're having those delivered today, and we will be up there to be part of that when they bring the washing machines. We've bought a bunch of food, and we're going to do a barbecue and do some music for them just mm-hmm. to eliminate all the tension and the pressure mm-hmm. and just their feelings of displacement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pastor Bill, how did they respond?
At first, they were a little suspicious because sometimes we in America, we want to come in there and we want to do what we think needs to be done, but first we need to gain their trust. And so they're a little bit suspicious at first, and yet they're very much in need right now. So we came in, and we have some of our local pastors who've actually gone out from our church about 10 years ago, and we've got some churches that have been started. And we go in there, and they know the language, so they're speaking. I don't speak any Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and so they're going in there and speaking Japanese, and they're playing with the kids, making balloon toys, and we're giving different items away to items that they need, maybe different little toys for the kids, or facial cream, or jackets and so forth.
Who are you with?
Washing machines where they can wash their clothes and have...
Pastor Bill? Pastor Bill, who are you with? You know, it sounds like we've lost connection.
It's good to hear that they even have a connection that we can talk
about. Right, right, absolutely. And that was one of the things we had to be mindful of, that there may be a drop, you know, or if we there'd be a possibility we wouldn't even be able to get through. But that was Pastor Bill Stonebreaker of Calvary Chapel, Honolulu. And he was talking to us. He's right there in Miyagi.
Yeah, he was talking about building up a relationship, and that's so important because, like he said, you march in there with what you think they need, and of course they need it, but yet there's a little bit of being on guard. And I think that's true with anybody. Mm-hmm. If someone came up to you and said, "Hey, take my $100 bill," you go, "Okay, yeah, but what are you up to?" You know, you got to check your motive. So it's so valuable to have people that live there and have been serving the neighborhood. They know the people and they know the language. So I think what's impressive upon me is the fact that you need to put the resource in the right hands.
And, you know, an underlying factor of this too is that when the disaster hits, when a crisis moment hits, in many respects, we can become very much more useful if relationship has been established ahead of time.
Right.
You know, of course, in a crisis moment, help is needed, so you help. But to really have the much fuller impact of relief.
I think
help.
For those of us, you know, as I listen here, this is just myself, but I'm sitting here going, I know I had a trip scheduled to Japan. I know it's tentative, but what can I do? So I already know that I'll be prayerfully considering what to do, but I have to do something. Well, I think we all, if we respond to the tug at our heart, that might be the Holy Spirit saying, hey, you know, I want you to do this. And I think if we just really prayerfully consider and give God the opportunity to work through us to help others, I think that's going to be very enabling and powerful if we can all move at the same time together.
You know, I've spoken with Pastor Bill about some aspects of strategy and how they're, I mean, he's assessing. He goes, he's a senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Honolulu, renowned minister, not only in Hawaii, but you know, throughout the United States. He has a worldwide ministry through radio and television. But he himself goes to get a look at it. And he's working with, I know the missionary's name is Travis. And he's there with Travis, who's already been there, lived there, knows the language, and with other missionaries that have started, planted churches. But what they're doing is he's assessing, what is it really like? What is the need? So that the resources that are given with a more of a sharpshooter perspective than just like a buckshot thing.
And yes, he's not up there sightseeing by all means. He's checking out the situation. He's looking at the hearts. He's listening. He's going to be talking to a lot of people, I'm sure. And then when he decides to do something and he puts his weight on it, I think it's going to really go.
And a lot of times, things like these are a lot bigger than just theories, thoughts, plans, and strategies. A lot of it evokes emotion. We're emotional beings, so it's evocative. You know, it drives us. It compels us. It moves us. And, you know, I think we could be right on target to say that there are leaders, churches, movements, denominations, like James was saying, that the denominations are already, they're working together. You know, years ago, I remember in the 90s, Jamie and I went to Japan, and 1 week was spent with the evangelical conservative group. So I went and spoke at churches and had meetings and spoke at a seminary. The next week, it was with the Pentecostal and charismatic churches. Now, all Christians, but it's like, and what was said back then was that they acknowledge one another, but they don't work together.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's happened now, right, as we speak, that the line has been erased. The crisis is erased, and God has brought unity in it. And, you know, one of the great mysteries of the working of the mighty Holy Spirit and the way he works in our lives.
Right. And I think just listening to him, I'm thinking, okay, the obvious is obviously send out support, send them money, send in the funding. But then he's talking about what they're doing. And I'm going, we can do something. Oh, she said, we have to drop off a machine. Okay, can you lift the machine off the back of a pickup? Mm-hmm. Making balloon, can you do balloon animals? Can you do wood? Can you do concrete? Can you just sweep? Can you mop? I mean, I don't think there's anybody that has no skills that can't be used. I think it's just a matter of figuring out and really asking God, what do you want me, what role would you like me to play in this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that just prayerful discussion between us and God, I think that in itself is of immense value.
Well, and how practical, you know? They need to wash clothes. Where they can have electricity, where they have electricity, well, plug in the washing machines. We feel better when we are in clean clothes, right?
Right. Can you play basketball? Go play basketball with the children out there. You know, can you bake a pizza? Go bake. You know, it's like we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be there, but if you have, you can do crafts. I know a church group that ladies get together and just sew little yarn cross things that missionaries can go use that to open doors and to give out and to start discussion. We don't have to be there. We can do this via satellite. We can put them in the arms and hands of people there through our organizations.
Right.
And that way there's a lot of, satisfaction to know that even if it's a small piece, everybody doing a little bit together mm-hmm. can become a big impact.
And I think the people that are already there, that live there, they need support as well. They mm-hmm. need encouragement. They need resources. They need to know that they can be the conduit by which God's blessings can flow. They're already doing it,
mm-hmm.
but more is going to be needed. So, you know, if we think from a very practical standpoint, how can a person connect and have some of their resources given mm-hmm. strategically?
I think that the churches can get involved by discerning how to get it. Because I know people are coming to church and there's a large number and they're just waiting for the call. They're waiting for a good venue, a good channel to put the resource in. So I think the church leaders mm-hmm. can be instrumental in that, to sit down and say, okay, here are your choices. These are the ones that, you know, I think that we would recommend, endorse, and get it out there, and get it out there quick.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a organic connection with your whether it's a denomination mm-hmm. or call it, you know, nowadays we call it movements,
mm-hmm.
church movement. If there's an organic connection, then and by all means, you know, that's God set that up.
And many churches do have mission committees that support missionaries. And I think that's a good place to start. I would think that's the first place I'd start, is say, hey, you know, call them, say, we want to do something. Tell us, what can we do? What would be of most leverage?
Well, and let's throw this out too. I mean, you know, sometimes it's not the most well-organized and it's not the most well-oiled programs, but in times like these, who knows? I mean, we know from our Paradise Global Mission experience, when we first started, I mean, even sometimes now, you're off balance. You're there, you're meeting a need, God has called you, you're going in obedience, and here's the thing, you go. I mean, and mm-hmm. it's a little odd sometimes, because the program is actually being developed as you go, and the systems are in place, you know, maybe 5 years later
mm-hmm.
or 2 years mm-hmm. later. You know, that's mm-hmm. relative. But mm-hmm. you go, and God, and here's the marvel too, is there are things that God will reveal, there are things that God will say to you, there are things that God will show you, things that will happen within your own heart and spirit mm-hmm. because you go, because yeah. you release.
Right, and I think if you just follow what the Holy Spirit's doing, you know, He's got this all figured out. We're confused. We don't know what to do. We're frustrated. But you know what? Again, I think if we just respond, the plan will unfold one day at a time, one moment, one contact at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to think that a lot of this, you know, it's our role to put the arms and the legs and the wheels behind what God is already doing. But there is a plan. We just have to follow it.
Martin, let me just throw out a couple of things in relation to contact. You know, people, you've heard James Kobo from Japan today in a previously recorded interview recently done. And then today we were able to hear Pastor Bill Stonebreaker right from Miyagi. They've given out washing machines. They're helping, you know, provide sources of power. But some contact information. James Coble, you can. He's got videos. He's got pictures. He blogs via Facebook. James Coble. Check him out via Facebook. And for Pastor Bill Stonebreaker and his ministry, you know, you can go to www.calvarychapelofhonolulu.com.
And how do you spell James's last name?
Coble. C-O-B-L-E. C-O-B-L-E. James, interesting man. He's a local boy, surfer. He's Hapa, as we say. His mom is Japanese. His father is Caucasian. You know, grew up in Hawaii, and at a heart, he's an extremely talented graphic designer. But God called him and his family to the mission field, and they went to train in the Philippines and spent considerable time there, and then God prepared them, and they went to Japan. And they are there when this happens. And to think about Pastor Bill Stonebreaker and what he's doing, to assess, come back, and really, in essence, reload, but to be really succinct and sharp in the way they utilize the resources. Mm-hmm. So again, Pastor Bill Stonebreaker at CalvaryChapelOfHonolulu.com and James Coble at Facebook. You can reach him at Facebook. You know, Martin, any last thoughts, a parting shot? How about somebody that's going through a meltdown in their life right now? As
no, I think what James was talking about, you know, that's why they're out there. And we don't have to wait for a big tragedy to occur. I think the important is we all need to be prepared to recognize that things can happen very quickly in our lives.
Yeah.
And we may not have a chance to get it right with God. So we need to make sure that we're ready.
And, you know, good point, Martin. With that, and I'd like to add also, though, that in the midst of what we feel like our life's meltdowns, we need to be very grateful for what we have. Well, it's been a blessing to be with you. Psalm 71:14 says, "But I will hope continually and praise you yet more and more." If you'd like to have a relationship with Jesus Christ, visit us at thegoodlifehawaii.org. It's always a blessing to be with you. We've been joined by our featured guest today, James Coble, and Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Until next time, I'm Danny Yamashiro, along with my co-host Martin Arinaga and technical producer Leah Rodriguez. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let Him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org. And may God richly bless you with The Good Life.